Eric Reed in the background. With the tone and a lonely place. Ooh. Conversation with my cousin last night. Taking her with me over the day of explanations and things. She saw that I was upset. You know, I told her, I said, you know what? As a man, sometimes I want to strike out. I want to knock somebody down, hit them, draw blood. That kind of thing. But I know that I can't do that. That wouldn't be right. So that's not going to happen. But what do I do with all of this? Well, I have to tell God about it. And I think sometimes it affects other parts of my body. Pain, it just... I said it exploded on me. So I thought that I'd come in the studio late tonight and talk a little bit about how to curb my behavior of going off. In a lonely place, it's all right to swing is the name of the album, and the name of the guy playing it, of course, my good friend Eric Reed. A nice album. Thought you'd like that. Yeah. So what do you do when you want to explode on somebody? You see a lot of that kind of stuff in the movies a lot. And
heads up, it's your last chance.
But in real life, you really don't want to do that. So what do? Jerry was talking to me last night, and she told me that, Junie, they're not going to get away with it. And it's the way she said it. It's the way she said it. It's the way she invited another power to take over. She says, you need to get that off your mind. But know this, they are not going to get away with what they did. Constant battle to justify a reaction that I participated in a religious sense when I was in that office as a pastor. I didn't think I knew that it was the right thing to do. I knew that it was the right thing to say. Everything that I said in ministry, I was guided by nothing but biblical exegesis. Not by any man, not by any dogma, not by any strange doctrine. I should have realized, though, that it's almost humanly, totally impossible for a human being to ascribe to the things of the Bible unless God was guiding in their lives. I was under that impression that most people that attended church on a regular basis and put money in the basket did believe in what they were following. and did believe in what they were hearing and seeing. They didn't see any stupid miracles and things like that, because I never participated in such foolishness. No, nothing like that. If it wasn't rational, I made it rational with the explanation of why I said what I said. But I still can't get over now, even as an older man. I cannot get over the treachery, the betrayal, in this pain that I'm in. I hope this helps me get through this webcast, because it's like, I remember Paul said somewhere in the Bible, he said, lest I fell exalted, God gave me a buffeting in my flesh, lest I should feel superior. Now, pain slows me down from doing what I'm supposed to do, because I have to give some attention to it. You know, finding the right position to lie in, to stand in, to walk in. One of the boys, Mario, he stepped in, so I was in this agony, and he went and he bought me some. I had run out of my devil's claw tablets that I take. That's some good, good natural herbs, and then muscle therapy with arnica. I'm going to rub it all over that area. See, I'm trying not to take the horrific strong pain pills, because they dizzy me, and I don't want to be dizzy. But it's hard. It's hard when you have worked at something your whole life, your whole life's work, and to see how it can dissipate right in front of you. Disappear. Someone can take advantage of that and you end up on the low end of it. It's rough. And I go to the Maker. I go to God. And I say, please don't let me harbor these feelings. I've been having these horrible thoughts. Horrible thoughts. A payback, I guess I can call it that. Hey, if somebody did you cold-blooded, would you do all you could to pay them back?
It's not my job to give them payback. Father Time does that for me. And a thing called the reflection. I don't have to pay them back. Time itself pays them back. And the image that they see when they look in the mirror.
Ooh. Now, that's a... That was good. That was good. That was a philosophical thought that I did not expect. But then I did. My God. Anybody hang around me for more than 2 weeks, you know that. But it's still a human desire that, you know. So, I'll cut this short tonight, because I just wanted to let you guys know, because I said last night I'm not going to be doing any more of the tapes. I think I'm at the bottom of the barrel in terms of what I want to put up on my website. And so what I think I'm going to do now is this, because I had all day, along with this pain that I'm fighting, to think it through. I had to think it through. What am I going to do? Excuse me. I plan to go to my stacks, my actual study notes, and I'll talk you through them. Obviously, I will have no recollection of the reason why I put those things together, but since I put it together, it was done on my computers. It was printed out by me. I think I'm going to talk you through them quickly. And let's see that after all these years, because, you know, I'm going to just tell you guys the truth. I told God when when I started going through all this stuff about all this church bull crap, I told God I just want to speak for you, and that's what I'm going to do. But I'm going to, I mean, when somebody opens up my mind and tells me the truth about what somebody really felt about me, people that I love, that I poured myself into, literally, only to find out that these people despise the very air that I breathed. It's no wonder they don't look me up. You know, you like people to come by your house and say, "Hey, PJ." They don't come by. No. I never pimped them. I never did them like that. Somebody was telling me, my cousin was asking me about a TV program that's on the Oprah network. And she said, "Oh, yeah, you don't have television." I said, "No, I would have one of those things." And she said, "You have to see that program because it's on the Oprah network and they uncovered the crass stuff that church people do." Well, I say this, when you got a man that really believes it, and you do that to him because he tells you the truth, or you participate in any kind of thing like that, I even feel sorry for the people that try to pick up the ministry that I built and that God gave me the insight to do and try to put your hand on and try to make it go anywhere, because it's not. It's not going anywhere. Man, you know, it has to be hard on me when somebody tells me, "John, all that stuff that you have on your website that you were preaching like that," he said, "those people didn't want to hear that. They couldn't even understand what you were talking about. Can you believe that?" I said, "What?" He says, "John, they didn't understand you. They didn't know why you outlined, why you brought it in that form." And if you go to college, that's where you get it, in a college or a university. It's called exposition. Man. Yeah. "Vengeance is mine, says the Lord. I will repay." Now, that is somewhat of a comfort for me, but I don't like to think about these people suffering for what they did. But I believe this, that if they really marred the work of God that God wanted done, and I'm not worried about my life, I'll be okay. Somebody gonna bring me something to eat, I'm not worried about that. And if they don't do that, I'll eat air sandwiches and be very full of it. I have learned, as the Bible said, whatever state you find yourself in, within that state there, right there, to be content with it. Or if you can feel this pain coming up in my... But I just thought that I shared because you guys are younger than I. And some of you have never experienced this. As a matter of fact, I was speaking with a young man, and he told me that he's experienced this kind of behavior from his friends early in life. I thought that this only happened late in life, but no, he said early in life. I had one young man tell me, when anybody ever tells me that they love me, I just look at them. I said, why? And the conversation that ensued was that people have a very twisted definition of what love means. You know, you're going to, God, how can you, nothing. I'm not going to ask that question, because I would have been put all over the internet, and the person that did it would have known that I detest what he did so much that I would share it with other human beings. I've got to let God judge. And it's like my cousin told me, she said, Joni, you're letting it get to you. I said, I love these people. And she says, can't you ever realize the fact that they never really loved you? They probably do not know how to love. And that they have to live with what they did to you and your family. They're not going to get away with it. That's what Pokey told me. And that's good to know. Because when you know something like that, and you know they're not going to get away with it, then you have to leave it in another one's hands. Mario just stepped in here, just passed by the studio, the door is open, and you heard what he said. And he's 30 years old. See, people know there's going to be some retribution, because I was telling this friend of mine, I said, I just want to sit down with the people that are still alive and love them and talk with them and ask them how they're doing. And he says, John, they can't do it. They can't look at you knowing what they did. I said, why not? I forgive them. I'm sure God can. And he looked at me and he said, you are a kind man. He said, but most people are not like that. I said, these are some of the most open conversations that I've had, because when I was a Christian pastor, I was naive. I was in that zone. I did not even comprehend the thought of anything corrupt connected with God, such as a lie. If you don't like me, if you don't like my wife, why you hang around me? I guess the thing that bothered me the most is that the people didn't care for my wife because she was Asian, because she was Filipina. I guess that's what bothered me the most. Racism within the black church from black people is treacherous, cruel. Asking questions of a friend of mine about my wife's sexual nature. Can you believe that? Coming from these, don't join them churches. Please don't join them. Because they do it to you. They talk about you. You know, I was a very popular young pastor when I was in my 40s. All right? And I had a lot of younger pastors than myself would come around. And they'd love to be around me because of my ability to love them. And I'm always thinking that their love is genuine, but I have not heard from these people. Some of them are still alive. I befriended them. The hypocrisy that exists, but it's good to know that they're not going to get away with it. Because I was having that conversation with my friend, and I said, you know, this heaven and hell thing, you know, I was always light on hell, though I believed that if someone would do something as disastrous as that, I would say from the pulpit that they're going to bust hell wide open doing something like that. And the people would sit out there and laugh. And I'm not talking about the young people that were coming in through the radio ministry. All those were innocents. It was these other ones, the treacherous ones, that wanted position. Wanted to be the pastor. I wanted to be Judas to hold the money back. Can you believe that? So who's ever holding the money back in most cases? It's just like Judas. I should have known that. And I knew and know today who held the money bag. And I understand they still listen to me. Are you that? Is it that easy? See, they know who they are. And they won't come forward and tell me what they did to me. And I've been on this thing for years, and I'm playing all these sermons and everything, and I wanted to stop yesterday. I said, I'm going to stop. No, I'm not. That's what the enemy wants of me, to stop. I'm going to quote my Bible studies on my website. I just paid the bill yesterday. I'm gonna quote my Bible studies. And those of you that continue to listen to me, and I know you do because I'm looking at the counter. I can tell by the counter on the bottom of this page how many of you come. And it's enough. And it's enough to keep me interested enough in you. Even amongst the pain and the annoyance, doggy bark, hardcore setup. He knows I'm doing the webcast. It's at night. He's been punishing me all evening with that howling. Anybody can walk by, and hardcore detests it. He lives as if he owns the whole street. And he does. It's my hardcore. Thank you for coming to my website. Thank you for listening to an old man chatter about life. Taking it from the heart of a pastor who pastored a church, who taught the Bible as it is taught. Not as as a pastor think it's taught, but as it is taught. I can't shut down yet. One of the statements was, why does he keep preaching that stuff? Nobody's concerned about all that history and all that kind of stuff. All he needs to do is get up there and say, Peter did this, Peter did that, now don't you do that, and let us go home. And there was a man that was a traditionalist, because that's what traditionalists do. Traditionalists don't want to know the deep, hidden, insightful secrets and mysteries of the Godhead. The traditionalist just wants to keep his tradition going. Oh, I can't stop talking. As the church grew with members, and of course they were younger, I would talk to the older officers and I would say, you know what, you old boys need to start coming out to Bible studies so you can keep up. It's funny that I'm having these recollections of these things, because that's what I said to him. I said, if you're going to keep up, you need to come out to Bible study, because I'm teaching these youngsters some things that I'm quite sure that most of you have never encountered in your minds. That's kind of a pastor I was. And them old deacons. One of them, chairman of the trustee board, he very quickly was putting in his resignation. And I would go by and visit him every Christmas, every Easter, his home, his family, blessing them. They were very, very dear, dear people that I loved a lot. And I loved him a lot. Only to understand he never cared for me at all. Wow. I mean, you know, that's some deep stuff. Deep stuff. And so when you're in a church that is a traditional church, and I used to tell people that we were not. I wasn't. No, I wasn't traditional. Not the way I preach. And in the black community also. And I believe that that kind of love and that kind of fervency and that kind of preaching is what can redeem our community. Even Southside Chicago community, where brothers are killing brothers at an enormous rate. My sister stays in that grand city. If I were there, you know, I would be on the front lines trying to figure out a way. Because I just love me some young black men a lot. And it grieves my heart to see them get shot down the street like dogs by other young black men. That is something from the pit of deception. That stuff comes from the worst part of our anatomy, the brain. And I can't figure it out. I don't know why. One black man, just for the sake of the other guy being there, would want to shoot or maim or injure or hurt, biscaze, maw, scandalize, erupt us with fistus and fastus to any black man. I don't get it. So many things we talk about. And the man that's telling me this, I'm looking deep into his eye, eyeball to eyeball, because I'm looking, hoping, praying that some of that is a lie. And I'm looking deep down into this man's eyes. And that's when the Spirit hit me, that I wanted to do something to somebody because of what they did to me. And that's what my cousin told me. They're not going to get away with it, Junie. One Sunday, I'm preaching, teaching, trying to invite the community to come into a wholesome mental thing. And the next Sunday, I gave my keys to the building up. I was getting ready to go from church to church on Broadway in South Central Los Angeles to the Hispanic churches as well as the black churches. I was going to put on this big luncheon and invite all the pastors and their staff on a Saturday. Our church was going to pay for it, because we bought this new building on 95th and Broadway. If you go by there now, put it in Google, it is a school. A school bought it. And all those old Spanish-made adobe buildings that were thick and warm and built, they're gone. They built a school there. The main auditorium may still be there. That stained glass windows was worth thousands. That was a beautiful building. That's why I chose it, because it reminded me of the church in the old days where the Word of God was proclaimed. It was an old Lutheran church. And what I know about Martin Luther, oh my God, preaching behind that area there was historic for me. I was right in sync. Not with the Puritans, but with the classicists. The classicalists, if you can call them that. The classic teaching of the Bible. Not interrupted by fanfare. You hear my dog out there? I told him I didn't want to hear this tonight. But you hear him out there starting to fight. That's hardcore. Like that little bulldog that I had as my... That was bro, man. Well, this is hardcore. Hardcore. And he's like a wild stallion. I guess where I won't do anything, that dog won't stop. Yeah. I believe that if every pastor that's listening to me wants to be successful in his church, then he should put on that robe, that scarf, that whatever he wears, even if he wears a suit or an open collar. And if the church may be as large as a cathedral or small as a house church, that pastor needs to ask some people in front of him, y'all really love me? Because if you really love me, regardless of what I do and say, I expect you to love me for the rest of your days in the way that I love you. You think that happened in the past churches that I pastored? I don't even hear from most of them. They act as if they're ashamed to. The ones that still listen to me, they got a, I put it this way, they got a thing for me, because I have a thing for them too. That's why we were good friends. And sometimes people are just too ashamed to say, damn, I really love John. I love him too much. That's all right. You can't love me too much. I need all the love I can get. And whoever taught that you could be loved too much? I remember when Mario first came into my life, within the first 2 months, he had me hemmed up against one of these doors. I mean, mad as hardcore was out there, cutting up a fit. And to hear what that man said on this webcast, unrehearsed, you can't buy that anywhere. But I tell you one thing, you can breed it in other young men. Yes, you can. You can't breed it in a woman. You can't do it. No. See, we live in this age. One of these days I'm going to do a study on patriarchism and matriarchism and the difference between the two. Because when you live under a patriarchy, and don't think of Trump, because that is not a patriarchy or a matriarchy. You know what that is? That's anarchy. That's what that is. So I'm talking about a real man, because a real man is sensitive towards a woman, understands a woman completely. And when the woman says that she understands him, he just smiles, because he knows she has no idea. None. I remember one time. No, it's when I got out of the hospital the last time. My daughter says, Daddy, we think it's time for you to see a therapist. I said, what? We think it's time for you to see a therapist. I said, what did I do in order for you to think I need to see a therapist? Oh, Daddy, You're not different from other men. I said, yes, I am. Your daddy's a real man. Oh, he's weak. I don't have money and guns and power. I can't make nothing, but I'm a real man. And when it comes to being reasonable and rational, I'm going to think like a real man. I'm not going to think like one of these millennial men. Everything got to be together. We got to work out for the whole group, and we got to pull them up. I said, I pull your tooth, that's for all. I'm pulling you up. I think that was a part of my difficulty when I was pastoring that church. I was trying to pull people up. You get it? Sometimes you gotta leave people where they are. Some people were not intended to be up. I remember one of the men, Pastor John, I said, what? Tell me, do you ever think I'd be a good teacher? I told him, no. Not at all. He said, how could you say that? I said, because you can't carry a thought from here to across the street without losing it. And teaching involves extrapolation. I've never heard you do that. You don't know what the word means. And the preacher's greatest gift is the ability to extrapolate. To say what you say at the first time 400 more times without them knowing that you changed the definition until they get the point, because you love them enough to do it that way. All right? See, they don't teach you that in seminary. They taught me in seminary, don't extrapolate too much. Just keep them there 20 minutes and let them go, because people are not used to listening to more than 15 minutes of the Word of God. That's what my preaching teacher taught me. He was far younger than me, at Talbot Theological Seminary. And I laughed, and he said, Mr. Goldman, you find something funny? I said, yes, you are. I said, my sermons now are 60 minutes and headed towards 90. Because I was pastor in the church when I went to seminary. So I was one of the oldest students. I was in my 40s. And I told him, I said, man, and the people that I teach and that are sitting in front of me are black people and Hispanics. And they don't skip a beat, albeit they're young college agers. I said, what you talking about 15 minutes? See, when that preaching teacher told me that from that world-class seminary that taught me about what they think of the spiritual mind of their audience, that's exactly what that was. Now, what I did is I went over the edge on the other side of it. I presented to a congregation of people that said that they knew what I was talking about, because I'd ask them, are you reading me? Are you understanding what I'm saying? Do you see what all this is all about? And then I'd give another illustration and another illustration. Usually in all my sermons, I had one big idea, and I stuck with that big idea for 90 straight minutes. For 90 minutes, stuck with it. My cousin told me last night, she said, Junie, somebody got it. They may not want to tell you right now. You may have to die first, and their grandchildren would talk about it. The preacher that nobody liked but that everybody loved. Who? They're talking about me? Well, come on, Junie. Don't you want to be famous like the rest of them? You want to leave a legacy, don't you? Is this why you're a little down and out? because nobody will be mentioning your name? Oh, no, they're going to be mentioning my name all right. I know that already. I don't need the human to affirm me. God has already let me know that. And it's not the name that is important. It's the style. Because it's the only style that's going to get America back. Well, I'm not even going to get into the tariffs and all that. I'm going to end up this wonderful, wonderful webcast. And just to think that I was going to cut this thing off in just a few minutes. And let's see. Oh, yeah, it's a good-sized cast. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming to my website and listening. And I would pray that I'm trying to get some music for you. That's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get some music, but they have this confounded advertisement that they're playing, and I don't want to hear it because I'm copying some music off of now I'm going to pause it and do this. It's late. How you guys doing? Are you guys glad that I made up my mind to be real? I know you are. This is it. I'll end up with this. In the Wee Small Hours of the Morning by Randy Hacklesmith, I think his name is. In the Wee Small Hours of the Morning. I remember that melody when I was a kid. This song. Hubbardstadt. Randy Hubbardstadt on the piano. I've never heard of him. It's amazing. Yeah, I think I'll let this play out. I'll call it a night. Thank you for coming to my website. Thank you for allowing me to ramble on. And next time, I hope to find a real good Bible study to share with you right here in the Lucy Goldman studio. Ah, Lucy, I miss you, girl. She would come in, and you know what? She did. God bless you, people. You know the drill. Whatever you do, stay in the Word of God.